You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
That escalated quickly. Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. The Rockets got it done in relative cruise control on Sunday night in Dallas, 105-82 winners against the Mavs, even without James Harden. Not a ton to take out of the game because the Rockets, even without Harden, simply a better team than the now 21-45 Dallas Mavericks. More importantly, for the Rockets, now 52-14 on the year and winners of 18 of their last 19, with the 17-game winning streak unfortunately coming to a halt on Friday in Toronto, coupled with the loss by Golden State to Minnesota earlier Sunday afternoon, the Rockets now have a two-game lead in the loss column, plus the tiebreaker, effectively giving them a three-game cushion at the moment over the Warriors in the race for the number one seed and home court advantage throughout the NBA playoffs. So the first couple of segments of our normal three-point recap, we'll explore the game, but I don't want to discuss too much about Rockets-Mavs because, well, the Rockets just have bigger goals than this Dallas Mavericks team, especially Mavs team, night two of a road, back-to-back, Wes Matthews sitting out with an injury. You'd like to see the Rockets take command. They did that at the start, getting off to a 20-5 lead moments in. The Mavs did actually cut it to one in the second half, but the Rockets pushed it into overdrive very quickly, won the third quarter 32-16, the fourth quarter 25-19. That's combined 57-35 in the second half, the advantage for the Rockets. And the Mavs actually had a couple of points in the final 2 minutes. If not for that, the margin could have been even larger. So we'll talk about the game first couple of segments, and then towards the end of the show, we'll talk more about the Rockets and Warriors, the race for the one, and why these past couple of days have been so big on that front for the Rockets in the grand scheme. Now, as far as initial thoughts, James Harden did not play tonight. Let's discuss it, because more than any one game, you want to make sure your superstar is okay. I'm confident that he is. Now, yes, they did say it's a sore left knee. We know when it happened. It was a play in the middle of the Toronto game, and Harden did wince after it. DeMar DeRozan went down, rolled backwards after a foul, and kind of rolled up in. Importantly, it was the front of Harden's knee, not the back. Many times when you have a player roll into the back of the knee is when you could have mechanisms for an MCL-type injury. Think Josh Smith and Dwight Howard in the 2015 Western Conference Finals. DeMar, of course, not trying to do anything to Harden. It's just one of those occupational hazards of playing NBA basketball. Fortunately, to the front of the knee. And the reason I'm confident that it's not a big deal is that the Rockets made it clear to the media and everyone following that Harden is expected to play tomorrow night, that's Monday night, at Toyota Center against the Spurs. If it's a real injury, you tend to see more of a day-to-day approach. We'll wait till you get back home. We'll see how he's feeling. He'll go through some pregame workouts. To confidently say 24 hours in advance that James Harden will play, that tells you, or tells me at least, that a big part of why James Harden sat out was rest, and that it was at least partly strategic. I'm not saying there was no knee pain at all, but players always get bumps and bruises over the course of an 82-game season. For the Rockets to immediately say that there's a return date, let alone the very next night, I think that speaks pretty strongly to the idea that they're not especially worried about this. It's not the kind of injury where, compare it to Golden State, who has been without Stephen Curry the last two nights for them, both losses, and there's not an exact timetable known. Of course, in the case of Steph Curry, it's the troublesome ankle that he sprained several times this year, but he's not going with them on the road trip. Of course, they're not showing any long-term concern, but in terms of the short term, is he going to come back the next game? Is it going to be two or three down the line? They don't know, because it's an injury. They have to see how it responds. For the Rockets to be this confident on Harden and say he's returning the very next night, that makes me lean a lot more to the rest side of the fence, especially with Harden in his practice gear on the bench. I would not worry about what happened with James. I think the Rockets saw a fortuitous time in the schedule. They have had a lot of three-game and four-night stretches, and the Spurs tomorrow night, say what you will, but everybody knows the Spurs culture. It doesn't matter who Greg Popovich throws out there. They can be a tricky team, especially with the Rockets on a back-to-back, the front end on the road in Dallas. So I think the Rockets, they know that there have been a lot of kind of schedule games of late. I don't want to say schedule losses, other than maybe Toronto, which was the third game in four nights, the only actual loss they've had in the past 6 weeks or so. But certainly the games, the miles have piled up, now wrapping up a four-game road trip. They've only been home twice since the All-Star break, only two home games since Valentine's Day for the Rockets. Thankfully, this week, they get a couple of games at home. San Antonio Monday, the Clippers Thursday. More importantly, no games aside from that, so you get two games at home, and you also get a few days off to let everybody recharge. But I think this was a strategic decision to get Harden some time off against a Mavs team that they knew they should be better than regardless. As we said, the Mavs record speaks for itself. Now 21-46 on the year. The always tanking Mavericks team. I think I actually shortchanged them earlier. I believe I said they were 21-45. Actually 21-46. Don't want to shortchange our boy Mark Cuban up there in Dallas and the never-ending tank parade that they have up. But I think the Rockets clearly recognized that, knew they'd have a good shot even without James Harden, and they took care of business where it wasn't even close in the fourth quarter. And if you want a contrast, think back to last March when Harden went through a wrist injury that was very painful, but almost refused to sit out. Now, eventually, he did sit out one game in Phoenix in April. But this is the same month last year that even though Harden, you could see the miles starting to pile up. Because last year, of course, it wasn't just all the games he was playing. It was the insane usage. There was no Chris Paul. So by March, certainly you could see the wrist injury was a very acute situation, but also the overall mileage. And despite all of that, despite the Rockets being seemingly locked into the number three seed, D'Antoni did not manage that tightly. He trusted his veterans who always want to play. If you ask James Harden, do you want to play? I'm sure he's going to say yes. This year, the Rockets are doing what a lot of the fan base, the followers, have wanted them to do, which is be more aggressive, be more proactive in managing injuries, and even if it's not injuries, just overall rest and usage from your veterans. I think we've seen throughout this year, especially the guys that are either older or carrying a heavy workload, Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, when they've had any nicks, they've been held out extended periods, kind of get right, and not just the injury itself, but also their bodies to kind of manage a 32-year-old going through the 82-game grind. Not saying they're going to be quite that cautious with James Harden, but certainly it can help from time to time to give him a day off, especially in the midst of back-to-back three-game and four-night stretches, and then hopefully you have Harden fresh tomorrow night against the San Antonio Spurs when a lot of the other guys might be dragging a little bit on night two of a road back-to-back and, well, a partial road back-to-back in Dallas tonight and Houston tomorrow and on the second consecutive three-game and four-night stretch. Now, turning back to tonight's game, Rockets Mavs, 105-82 winners. We mentioned early on how the Rockets were able to mitigate the Harden absence. Well, the reason they were able to do that, their starting backcourt had a combined 50 points and 14 assists, that being Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. Chris Paul, 24 points, 12 assists, 5 rebounds, 9 of 18 from the field, that's 50%, above 50% from behind the arc, 4 of 7. Eric Gordon, 26 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 9 of 16 from the field, that's above 50%, and 6 of 11 from behind the arc. That's also above 50%. So when your starting backcourt shoots above 50% from behind the arc, you're going to win a lot of games. The plus-minus did not lie. By far the best on the Rockets. Chris Paul, plus 31. Eric Gordon, plus 27. Gordon was a seamless replacement for Harden. And Chris Paul, if there's one thing you can nitpick in that Toronto loss and give Chris credit, he owned it in the locker room. He said they have to give James more help. Well, that's especially the case if James isn't out there. When James is not out there, especially against a team you should beat, you need Chris Paul to go out there and be the dominant star-level player that we have seen from time to time that he still is and is capable of being, even at age 32. He did that tonight, and not just in terms of the team results, but individually, he made his shots from the field, from behind the arc. It's great to see him bounce back from a downturn. What happened in Toronto, that's the easiest way I can characterize it. Now, certainly I'm not going to make this Mavs game into anything more than it is. It's not a good opponent. But nonetheless, to bounce back this quickly, and after facing a little bit of adversity, it's not like the Rockets played especially well in the first half, especially the second quarter. They outscored 33-23, making it a one-point game at the half. Mavs actually had a brief six-point lead late in the second quarter. And at that point, it seemed like going into the half, Chris Paul finished with a flurry that got the Rockets lead at the half, and they picked up that momentum out of the locker room and extended it to where it was a 17-point lead after the third and quickly got into the 20s in the fourth quarter. So with the exception of a blip in the second quarter. And, folks, the Rockets only played 9 players tonight. Between the injuries, still no Ryan Anderson, still no Brandon Wright. Brandon Wright out a couple more weeks. Ryan Anderson's considered a short-term injury, but I don't think you're going to bring a guy like that back on the road. I suspect we'll, if not get Ryan back, at least have a more specific timeline when we get back to Houston, the Rockets tonight, and then of course they'll meet with the media before tomorrow's game against the Spurs. They'll have practice either Thursday or either Tuesday or Wednesday before Thursday's game against the Clippers. So either Ryan will come back very soon or we'll have a timetable. But for now, between the logistics, all the road games, the Harden injury rest, whatever you want to call it, the Rockets were limited to 9 players, and on the second stretch of 3 games in 4 nights, tired legs after a 4-game road trip, essentially every game on the road but 2 since the All-Star break, I think the Rockets getting up to that 20-5 lead in the first few minutes, and give them credit for that. As I said, the Rockets set the tone right from the jump. They brought the same defense that you eventually saw in the second half when the Rockets held the Mavs to just 35 points. That's tremendous defense up and down the lineup. I think the one blip was that when it was 20-5, I think maybe they expected the Mavs to fold. But Dallas, as we've said over and over again, as long as guys like J.J. Barea, Dirk Nowitzki, and Rick Carlisle are there, they're not the prototypical tank team, even if their standings might suggest that they are. When those guys are playing, especially against the Rockets and this Dallas-Houston rivalry, they're never going to go away quietly. And they mounted a charge in the first half. Fortunately, the Rockets did not get rattled, and they got back to basics. Certainly, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon put the ball in the hole with regularity. It's always great to see them making shots, especially against a Dallas defense that did not close out on shooters very well. But more than that, defensively as a team, the Rockets were just tremendous tonight. The 20-5 run limit and the 14 points in the first quarter and just 35 points in the second half. Could have been less than 35, not for the Mavs getting a couple of buckets late in garbage time. And when it comes to establishing a defensive tone, best ways to do it, you do it right out of the gate to hopefully kind of break the will, break the spirit. Now, it didn't quite happen that way tonight, but it could have. Probably would against a lot of bad teams. The Mavs might be the one exception with, as we said, the guys like Brea, Dirk, Rick Carlisle as the coach leading the way. But aside from that, then it's winning time, which is the second half, third quarter, and especially the fourth quarter. And the Rockets up and down the roster just defended very, very well tonight, I thought. Held the Mavs to just 16%, 5 of 31 from behind the arc. And the Mavs, 35% overall, 16%. The Rockets closed out hard on those threes. And with the Mavs on night 2 of a back-to-back, I think the priority for the Rockets defensively was to make them move. Don't give up the layups. Don't give up the open threes. Make them make plays on the dribble. And especially your younger guys, Dennis Smith, just 2 of 12, Yogi Ferrell, 1 of 8, Harrison Barnes, 4 of 16. But the Rockets did a good job making them make plays in space, and especially on night 2 of a back-to-back in which the Rockets were closing out hard on the threes. It seemed like the Mavs just ran out of gas, especially when the Rockets, and they're just stable of long perimeter defenders. Trevor Ariza, even though he was just 1 of 10, couldn't find his shot for the first time in a while. Trevor did have a plus 22 in the plus-minus in his 35 minutes. That speaks to how active and engaged he was defensively. And, of course, we all know what P.J. Tucker, 10 points, 2 of 3 from behind the arc, and Luke Bamute, 7 points, 3 of 7. You know what those guys bring. Also, shout-out to Tarik Black. In his 22 minutes with Nene out, you're not playing Nene on both ends of back-to-back, and as with Harden, it makes more sense to play him against the Spurs, a tougher opponent. I don't care who the Spurs bring out there. With the Spurs playing for their playoff lives and coached by Greg Popovich, you know it's not going to be an easy game. It makes more sense to use Nene on that end. And with Brandon Wright still out with the knee issue for probably a couple more weeks, it's an opportunity for Tarik Black. And tonight, 6 points, 9 boards in his 22 minutes, 2 blocks. He was a presence around the rim. Rockets were plus 9 in the 22 minutes that Tarik played. What's interesting about Tarik, if you want some optimism for how he could turn things around, and I'm not sure what his long-term role is going to be, because certainly then you get Brandon Wright back. Tarik's already the third team center now, and then what happens when Brandon Wright gets back? I don't know, but it's not that far-fetched to say that Tarik Black could beat out Brandon Wright. I think Brandon's still the favorite for that third job, but I think the Rockets, they like Tarik Black, and if you want, you know, a reason for optimism on Tarik in particular, it's that his track record before this year shows him to be a good defensive player. And if anything, that's where he was lacking early in the season. Now, we saw some confusion in the pick and rolls with James Harden, but what happened in a lot of those games, you would see it kind of wear on his overall, maybe effort's not the right word, but you would see him get discouraged. The body language wasn't there. Whereas now, for whatever reason, the chemistry seems to be better. He seems to be more secure in his place, or lack thereof, in the Rockets' offense, and he seems to be more focused on just controlling what he can control, which is being a force around the bucket, getting the rebounds. He moves in space better than a lot of centers do, and when he is focused on what he can do rather than what he can't, then he's a much more dynamic player. Now, I'm not going to say he's better than Brandon Wright. The one game that Brandon played with the Rockets since joining them as a buyout from Memphis was the game in Denver. I thought Brandon looked very good in those 15 minutes. Then, unfortunately, he had a knee injury. The Rockets do expect him to get back. They're optimistic on him long term. But it's not crazy to say that Tarik Black could beat him out, especially if Brandon Wright, who has been injury-prone, continues to have injuries. If nothing else, it's good to have that insurance, because Nene, at 35 years old, you don't want him to be your only backup center. So to see Tarik take advantage of the opportunity, it's a great sign. Also, Gerald Green, 13 points, 6 rebounds, made 3 threes. Joe Johnson, after getting so much ire, hashtag ISOJoe, finally made an appearance. In his 27 minutes, Joe, 12 points, 5 rebounds, above 50% from the field, 5 of 9. He only took 1 3 and missed it. He made most of his plays out of isolation. Also got to the line 2 times and made both of those. Now, you guys listen to me here at Locked On Rockets. You know I've been preaching sample size with Joe. His final 21 games in Utah, he shot nearly 45% from the field, over 37% from 3. I thought in Houston he's looked fine. I know why some of you like Gerald. I see the energy. I like Gerald too. But Joe gives you more dimensions in terms of how solid he is as a passer, his ability to create for himself in one-on-one situations, also on the low block, especially if you are limiting Joe to use as a small ball four rather than trying to play him at the wing. I think he gives you more dimensions than Gerald does. But I can say all those things, and at some point, Joe has got to show them, and especially coming off a game in Toronto, which Joe did make 2 of his 3 shots, I believe, but he was victimized by Van Fleet in the fourth quarter several times, also missed a 3. You could see that, certainly on Twitter, but I would say even amongst the Rockets, a team that's been so great all year, including before the arrival of Joe Johnson, there are folks that, even if it's a small sample size, at some point it can get in players' heads. And people can wonder, okay, is this guy really bringing enough to get minutes over Gerald Green? Or, say, over Ryan Anderson if he comes back and eats into Ryan's time a little bit. I'm not going to say that Joe has arrived based on one game against a Dallas team that's not especially good. I will just say that 12 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, excuse me, 2 assists in 27 minutes on 55% shooting from the field, it's a step in the right direction. It buys him time, and time is probably what he needs. Again, he's adjusting to a new system, a new role. He's trying to get back into playing shape. He did miss 6 weeks earlier in the year with a wrist situation, so there's a lot of reasons why you shouldn't jump off a bridge and lose hope. When I say jump off a bridge, of course, I mean metaphorically. With the play of Joe Johnson, you certainly shouldn't be down overall with a Rockets team that's 52-14. But as much as we can sit here and say this is why it should work out on paper, at some point you need to see some positive results on the floor to keep everyone going. And tonight in Dallas, it's a perfect candidate against a bad team to get right. Because the folks that didn't make a huge impact for the Rockets tonight, we mentioned Trevor Ariza. He was very good defensively, just 1 of 10 from the field. Clint Capela in his 23 minutes, 4 points, 8 boards. You're not worried about Trevor Ariza and Clint Capela. You're not worried about your veterans. What you want to see, well, you did want to see a bounce back from Chris Paul. But beyond that, you want to see the guys on your bench that are getting a chance to play with all these injuries, with the rest of James Harden, Gerald Green, Joe Johnson, Tarik Black, against a bad team, take advantage of their opportunities. And that's exactly what they did. Certainly on the offensive end of the floor, we mentioned the efficiency, but defensively as well. Because when you hold the Mavs to 82 points and less than 20 in 3 of the 4 quarters, it takes a team effort. All of the 9 guys that the Rockets sent out there tonight were dialed in defensively. And so for those guys off the bench, Tarik, Gerald, Joe, that's exactly what you want to see against a bad opponent. It's a perfect opportunity for the Rockets to get right, and that's exactly what they did. Also, final note on Eric Gordon. I should have mentioned this earlier, but before we move on from this game and start talking a little bigger picture, Eric Gordon in the 6 games since his return is now shooting 28 of 57. That's over 49% from behind the arc. Hashtag Splash Gordon. And as far as the variability, He's only had one game in there even below 40% from three-point range, and that was a whopping 36% in his first game back with the Clippers. Since then, all five have been 43% or better. So, Eric, six games? It's a small sample, but when it comes after a couple of weeks off to get a few nagging injuries to his knee, his back, then he had the bout with food poisoning. Well, since then, he has been a true difference maker on both ends of the floor, but especially offensively, long term, what you need more than anything else is the spacing. You need the reliable shooting around Chris Paul and James Harden, especially in the playoffs against the likes of the Golden State Warriors. And right now, he is giving you exactly that. He has morphed back into that elite three-point shooting version of Eric Gordon. And he had certain games like this in the first half of the year, but I think what kind of marred the first half of the year for the Rockets was that he would have a couple of games like this, but there was extreme variability from one game to the next. To see him have six consecutive games with essentially no off nights in there, in which all of them he is at least 36% rounding up from behind the arc, and, well, the last five, all at least 43%, boy, he is really, really locked in right now. And in addition to all the other positive things going on for the Rockets, when you're 52-14 and won 18 of the last 19 games, you do have a lot of things going right. But Eric Gordon being this blistering hot from three after getting some time to rest, that might be the best of all. Now, when I say it's the best of all, referring to Eric Gordon and his 49% plus three-point shooting to close out our prior segment, I'm referring to individuals, of course. And that's in Sunday night's 105-82 win over the Dallas Mavericks. Don't want to talk too much about that one game because, well, it is the Mavericks. Even without James Harden, you should win. Kudos to the Rockets for getting it done relatively easily, improving to 52-14 on the year, sweeping the Dallas Mavericks for the second consecutive year. Hope Mark Cuban enjoyed that. More importantly was the win for the Rockets in combination with another loss that Golden State suffered Friday night at Portland, today at Minnesota. We recorded Friday night's show before the Golden State game had concluded, so we didn't know if that would be a loss. It was also lost this afternoon against the Timberwolves. And to put into perspective how big this is, with those two losses, the Warriors are 51-16. The Rockets are now 52-14. As I said over and over again, with two teams that lose this infrequently, what you want to focus on is the loss column. Well, right now, the Rockets are up two games plus the tiebreaker. So to put it in perspective, let's say the Rockets close a conservative 12-4. That would be winning 75% of their games. They've won more than 75% of their games in the season, and certainly a higher clip than that recently. But let's be conservative. They do have a few tough games, including a back-to-back in New Orleans and Portland coming up. You got the Spurs, and they can jump up and bite you at any point. They almost beat the Warriors on Thursday, and that was before the two losses the Warriors suffered in Portland and Minnesota. So you're not going to take anything for granted with the Rockets. I'm not going to assume they finish the season on another 17-game winning streak. But even if the Rockets finish a modest 12-4 by their standards, for the Warriors to take the number one seed, they would have to finish 15-1. They played one more game than the Rockets, so they would have to finish 14-1. But that's how tough this is going to be for the Warriors, who, by the way, still don't know the exact status of Stephen Curry, because he's actually injured with an ankle sprain that's happened, by my count, four different times this season. There is no exact timetable. That's different from the James Harden situation, in which it seems at least 50% strategic rest. The Curry thing, that's a real injury. They still don't know exactly what his timetable for return is going to be. And the Warriors have to finish 14-1 if the Rockets finish 12-4. If the Rockets finish 13-3, which is very feasible, the Warriors have to finish 15-0. And if the Rockets finish 14-2, then there's not a damn thing the Warriors can do about it. It's not over, but the math is going to be very, very tough for Golden State. So for the Rockets, that's a big deal. Certainly, you don't want to let your guard down this week. The upcoming games against the Spurs and Clippers, these are the types of games where, not going to say either is easy, but you're favored in both. You don't want to let a game slip that is one in which I don't want to say either would be a catastrophic loss, but certainly it's not as daunting on paper as that New Orleans-Portland back-to-back. So you certainly don't want to let those get away this week. Or excuse me, no, it's New Orleans, Minnesota back-to-back, and then next Tuesday is at Portland. So it's a three-game and four-night stretch at New Orleans, at Minnesota, at Portland, all probable Western Conference playoff teams. So you do have three tough games coming up. You don't want to let these two this week. And San Antonio and the Clippers, they're very possible playoff teams in their own right. So none of these are going to be easy, but at home, and the first one, James Harden rested, the second, your entire team rested, it's important to take care of business. Because if you do, and you continue to hold that three games of separation, if not more, going down the home stretch of the year, then all of a sudden, you can be more strategic, not just with James Harden, but with Chris Paul, and that's a big deal. And that's why earlier in the week, some folks questioned when I made the statement that I thought that 64 or 65 wins for the Rockets could get the one seed. Wondering, and this was before the Warriors had suffered these two losses, the Curry injury, blah, blah, blah. Even before knowing there'd be another specific Curry re-injury, managing rest, it's important down the stretch. Managing minutes, I should say, and strategic rest. For the Warriors, for the Rockets, for anyone, it's very rare to see teams as important as the number one seed is, and I think the Rockets really, really want it, and it looks like they're going to get it. You can't just throw caution to the wind. Because more important than anything, especially the Western Conference, where it's very conceivable you could somehow play a team like Oklahoma City or San Antonio in the first round, San Antonio with Kawhi Leonard, it's not crazy that they could be the 8th seed or the 7th, something like that. Then what's most important, more than any seed, is to make sure that your guys are as close to 100% as possible by the playoffs and in rhythm. And so while you want that top seed, at the same time, minutes management, that's a part of the modern NBA. It's rare to see any team not rest at least a few players from time to time in those last 2 to 3 weeks before the playoffs. That's what you want to be able to do. Fortunately, the Rockets are going to be in position to do that. Now, I think the Warriors, especially coming off three straight Western Conference titles, two NBA titles in those 3 years, I think the one seed is slightly less important to the Warriors than it is to the Rockets. So I think if it comes to a point where the Warriors, feel like they're almost punting on the one seed, they might do it, because I think for the team that's established, it's less important to have game one, game two, game five, game seven in your gym. For the challenger, in this case the Rockets, you need every advantage you can get. So I think it's a little more important for the Rockets, and even if there wasn't a Stephen Curry re-injury, I was always confident that the Warriors, at least a couple of games, would pick spots here and there to rest their stars, because that's just what they do. They're not going to get so consumed. Would they like number one? Absolutely. But they're not going to get so consumed by it that they throw caution to the wind and force guys out there, especially Stephen Curry with a chronic situation with his ankles. So since then, of course, we have had a precise re-injury to Stephen Curry's ankle, and that's further created the separation. The good news, as we said with the Rockets, resting James Harden tonight, I think it's clear that they were going to be more cautious than last year, just out of principle, no matter where they stood in relation to the Warriors. But now that you have three games of separation, I don't think you'll see them be cautious this week, just because you finally have some time off with games. But if you're able to keep the lead at this level, let alone build it, if you're able to just keep the lead where it is now, essentially three games of buffer, then I do think it gives you even more incentive and availability to rest guys, not just James, but Chris Paul, Eric Gordon. We mentioned Eric's numbers, the 49%+ from behind the arc in the six games since his return, which has a lot to do with being fresh. I think the Rockets building the buffer, it only makes it even easier for Mike D'Antoni to rest guys like James Harden did tonight and like his other veterans down the home stretch of the year. And of course, that's going to be important as the Rockets not only want to win the number one seed, which thankfully they're in a great position to do now. Essentially, they'd have to be outplayed by three games over the final 16. But in addition to that, have their best foot forward in the playoffs in terms of everyone as healthy as possible and feeling refreshed, clicking on all cylinders, whatever you want to call it. By the way, one final thing to keep an eye on. I mentioned that the Warriors would have to outplay the Rockets by three over the final 16 games of the season for the Rockets. The same thing applies for the Toronto Raptors, who are three games behind the Rockets in the standings. The Raptors are, but they hold the tiebreaker courtesy of beating the Rockets both times, most recent one on Friday night. And I think a lot of us gained respect for the Raptors. Point differential doesn't lie. They're plus 8.8 right now. Winners of 9 in the last 10, 8 in a row. That plus 8.8 is literally twice as big as the number 2 team. That's the Celtics. And God, dwarfs the plus 0.2 that LeBron's Cavs have 10 games back, a very distant 10.5 back in third place. So Toronto, in my opinion, you can see why. I think you guys saw it on Friday night. They are far and away the class of the East. And right now, they're as close to the Rockets as the Warriors are. So keep them in mind. I don't expect them to catch the Rockets for the same reason as Golden State. They have to outplay the Rockets by 3 over the final 16 games. But just as you're keeping an eye on the Warriors in the box scores night to night, keep an eye on Toronto as well. Because while certainly the Warriors are priority number one, because they're in the West, and to get to the NBA Finals, you've got to get through Golden State first. They're the 500-pound gorilla. That's just the way it is. But it's not like you're home free once you beat the Warriors. The Raptors are incredibly good. You want to have the meaningful games in that series in Houston, just as you would with the Rockets-Warriors series. So the Raptors, I'm not going to say they're a threat, but they're as close to the Rockets as the Warriors are, so keep an eye on them as well. With that, I will wrap up because, well, if all you've got to do is keep an eye on two teams, the Raptors and Warriors, who are both extremely good, then, well, boy, your basketball team is in a great place, and that's where these 52-14 Rockets certainly are. So for tonight, I will sign off because we'll have another postgame show tomorrow as the Rockets look to win their second straight and 19th out of 20 games at home against the San Antonio Spurs. Until then, I will sign off. As always, thanks to all of you guys for listening to me here at Locked On Rockets. If you want more regular coverage, the best place to do it is on Twitter, or to find it, I should say. I am at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. You can also email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook us, facebook.com/lockedonrockets, or go to our website, lockedonrockets.com. There's always, you can connect with me, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, inquire about becoming a potential sponsor of this program, which is absolutely booming these days, thanks to the Rockets' great play on the court. Whatever we can do to make this a better show for you as a fan, or, well, you as a business person, I would absolutely love to hear from you. One final time, the happy final from Dallas on Sunday evening. Rockets 105, Mavs 82. Mavs drop to 21-46. Rockets sweep them on the season and improve to 52-14 on the year. Now 3 games clear, factoring in the tiebreakers of the Warriors and Raptors for home court throughout the West and home court throughout the NBA Finals. So on that note, how sweet it is, Houston. Enjoy the remainder of your weekend. We'll be talking again Monday night when the Rockets take on, well, the second part of their Texas rivalry, Rockets Spurs, Monday night at Toyota Center. Hopefully I will see a few of you guys there. For now, though, have a good night.